You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, December 9th, 2009. This is episode 109, Reaching the Technophobe. Welcome back. It's time again for another episode of the Wells Tech Podcast. We're at episode 109, and joining me as usual is our own Southern Belle, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally.
Southern Belle, preparing for a blizzard this morning, Martin. You got your snow pants ready?
You think I have snow pants?
Better get busy.
I was born in California. I don't have snow pants. But no, I'm not ready. It's actually snowing right now as we speak, and we're supposed to get 9 to 12 inches.
Yep, we're right on the border of 6 to 10, so we will see how it develops. The boys are crossing their fingers for a snow day, and I guess winter has arrived.
Yep. I look outside, and it looks like it's actually building steam now. Everybody around here is kind of wondering what's going to go on tomorrow. So the first one's always the worst, because nobody really can remember from last. We all have short-term memory loss, so we all forget what it was like last year, and we all survived it last year, and we'll survive it this year. So
I remember being on the phone with my friend, Pastor Brian Hockman, in Alaska, and it was colder here than it was there. Mm-hmm. So I do have a few memories of last year.
Yeah. All right, so the topic for the day is probably two-pronged, tech-challenged areas, and many of our congregations, I guess I would call tech-challenged in their ability to get, especially broadband. But by extension, we're going to talk a little bit about reaching the technophobe. So even in tech savvy areas, or areas where technology is not a challenge as far as getting broadband and even congregations that are into technology a little bit, you still have members who are not. So I think that's a timely topic, and we get questions on that, and it kind of ties nicely into our interview for the day when we last week were able to talk with Pastor Nitz from Malawi. And obviously, Malawi has their own technical challenges. So that was a very interesting conversation, which we're going to play a little bit later. So, Sally, let's talk a little bit about technology and tech-challenged areas. Where do you want to start?
Well, I think a good way to start is to just kind of deal with the questions that affect our congregations, the kind of things that our pastors and teachers and staff ministers are dealing with, and that is that they have members that say, boy, I don't even know how to check my email. I'm lost when it comes to a computer. I'm intimidated by anything that has to do with a computer. Maybe they don't convey all of that in words, but that's what they're saying with their lack of engagement. And it's kind of actually becoming, not the norm to not use computers, because really we're almost forced to use them. Dealing with different products and companies today, everything is going to the web and to that interactive type environment. So progress is really demanding it, and by using it in the church setting, we're really just kind of keeping up with the times, and it definitely is a movement that we need to be a part of. But what do you do with the members that don't even check their email, that are afraid of the viruses or the junk, the garbage that's out there?
Yeah, truly it is a handicap, I think, for those that aren't able or don't want to get online. It's both a handicap for the individual, because you can see that that's where things are headed. The commercials, the specials, even some of the coupons are all going digital. You're not getting the same coupons, let's say, for restaurants or Target or Walmart, you can get more and more of those online. And just the whole communication stream, news channels and newspapers are devoting more and more energy to putting their stuff online. So the individual is handicapped, but I think also the congregation would be handicapped if it has a significant number of its members not able to receive communications from the congregation. I know your congregation is probably like mine, Sally. We're trying to encourage our members to receive their newsletters, for instance, digitally, which saves a lot of money in printing costs and also in distribution costs and postage.
Right, and of course it allows for the information to be spread a lot more quickly,
right,
and also opens up two-way communication channels. So there's definitely a lot of great benefits to engaging in the digital communication. And I think real timely for our congregation, we're trying to start a new outreach initiative, and what we found is that we have to communicate. And, mm-hmm. As much as we want to rely on the digital methods and things, these people really enjoy hand-holding.
Mm-hmm.
They want to take things slow. They want to understand what they're doing. And sometimes that's hard for us. We're kind of the opposite of technophobes. We're, what do you call it, Martin, technophilia?
Yeah, I don't know if we have, yeah, technophilia is perhaps what, what we suffer, if you want to put it that way.
Right.
And that's, the other end of the spectrum where it's all about technology, and that's something you have to watch out for, too.
Right. And so for those of us that are all about technology, it may be kind of hard to take a step back and look at it from that different perspective of someone who's kind of afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a challenge there, and we need to be really patient with them and understanding of their perspective. And I know a lot of times when I deal with people, they feel embarrassed that I have to explain things to them, and they're
right,
always apologizing. I'm sorry, I just don't get it. I'm like, no, relax. Usually I have chocolate along, and I say, eat some more chocolate. Relax, and
yeah.
And we'll get through this together. It's okay. I had 20 people ask me this question yesterday, just trying to encourage them to not be afraid of it or afraid of asking
mm-hmm.
for help.
And Sally, you're really good at that, but I think a lot of us, including myself, aren't. I get very impatient, whether it be my wife or a relative or even somebody around the office here, that's not one of my gifts, is to really go slow, to listen and kind of understand where they're coming from, because everybody's coming from a little bit different spot. We can look at a new application or download a new application or go to a Web 2.0 app, and we have enough background and knowledge and boldness to figure it out. Not everybody's like that. There's hesitation. I think there's still fear that you can break something, that things can go horribly wrong. And so there's caution, and they want to move very slowly. So I think our approach needs to, map to that and kind of walk them through things, say it in a couple different ways. And then maybe, one of the challenges that I have when I'm walking somebody through new technologies, I want to take the controls. I want to grab the mouse. I want to do it for them. And really the important part is to have them do it.
That's right. And, I guess I have a little bit of a success story to share here. We did a summer program in our congregation. We called it Tuesday Tech Time. Had a huge turnout for our little church, 15 to 20 people per session. Was a big deal. And so there's definitely a lot of interest. And where we saw the benefit of that was over time, maybe not the first, second, or third session, but as we all got comfortable with each other, kind of that friendship evangelism kind of thing started happening,
mm-hmm.
where we were comfortable, we were friends, we could ask questions more, we could learn together, and in the whole process, we're sharing our faith and the work that we're doing there. So
right.
Sponsoring some congregational type training sessions might be a good way to get the ball rolling and reach out to those technophobes,
Yeah.
And it's really not that expensive to do. There's loads of resources online, and not very many barriers to getting them engaged.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just investing the time and patience,
right.
To train.
Yeah, I think it's an in-reach tool and an outreach tool. I think, just as you described, a great way to get people together to talk about technology, even if it's just very basic stuff. It has nothing to do with theology or Bible study, but just an opportunity to get people comfortable with technology. A lot of churches or that have schools obviously have computer labs, great use for them. Or I'm sure you could rustle up enough computers where you could bring people in to sit at a laptop, for instance, and get comfortable with some of the tools. Maybe even an introduction to the church's website, all the resources that are there. That's one thing I've done at my church is I've had a five-minute talk after church and actually gone through our website and said, look at all the resources that are available to you and what you could get as opposed to the month-old newsletter calendar that you're looking at. You have real-time information as things change or are added, those kinds of things. But also in the area of outreach, I teach a workshop right now called Reaching Out in a Digital World, and one of the suggestions I make there is to use a technology class as a way to invite the community into your facility. And similar to an ESL kind of a concept where instead of teaching English as a second language, you're teaching technology as a second language.
As a second language.
Yeah, TSL, sure. Right. and that seems to go very well in some mission fields. But I think there's also an opportunity here domestically to use that kind of strategy. And again, leverage the resources that you have. Get people onto your campus and interacting with your people. I'm sure every congregation has somebody qualified enough to at least do a beginning kind of technology class. Put an ad in the newspaper. Reach out that way. Just another opportunity.
And, all of this works really well if you communicate it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just circle back to my original statements that you need a communication plan in place. If you're doing a five-minute session after worship, maybe once per quarter, help people know that that's coming up and that they can expect that on a regular basis or whatever.
Yep.
Continue to communicate. Look here on the website. Drive their traffic that direction. Encourage them. Put new things out there for them to send them there and help them feel comfortable mm-hmm. there.
As always, Sally, you've prepared some dynamite resources in this area. What are we going to share in our show notes in this for this topic?
Well, one of the main things I want to share is a link to a really simple introduction to the web, and this would be for the true technophobe. I've been using it, and it's really probably written for children, fourth grade and up,
mm-hmm.
But I've recommended it to many adults in our congregation who just don't understand the basics of what their browser is, how to copy and paste, how to do effective searching, those kind of things. It's called Welcome to the Web, and it's a really comfortable setting where you can explore all those different topics and practice them along the way.
Mm-hmm.
It was done by an educator in England, and I think you'll find it to be a really valuable resource.
What kind of things does it talk about?
Well, definitely a section dedicated to searching.
Okay.
And I'm just trying to bring up the website and refresh my memory here. Staying safe on the internet.
Okay.
And then just some tricks and things like it goes into the different browsers and shows you examples of how to do printing, how to do copy and paste, that kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah. Just some of those really 101 kind of stuff, which
exactly.
which a lot of people
we take
for granted.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I like I said, I offered this session this summer. And, I'm copying and pasting left and right, and people are like, slow down, what are you doing, And so
it's
those
magic.
Skills just really need to be taught.
Right, right. And we found some Wikipedia entries for technophobia and technophilia. I think both of those are very educational. And then you found a good blog that talked a little bit about simple ways to introduce reluctant colleagues to technology.
Right. That one's kind of geared toward teachers because, mm-hmm. There's a lot of buzz in the education community now about how educators have to get up on this whole Web 2.0
right.
World that we're living in because they're training the students who tomorrow will be using those tools for
right.
who knows what jobs in the future, And so just a lot of ways to encourage fellow teachers who are maybe technophobes.
Sure.
Starting really simple. Start slow. Take it easy. Use a projector in class. Maybe use a document camera where you can project books or other things on the screen. And
mm-hmm.
Just be comfortable with the technology before you jump in, you know, and go crazy with it. Don't get overloaded.
Yep, very good. So, speaking of technology challenges, pastor or missionary Paul Nitz, who lives in Lilongwe, Malawi, although he lives what I would call in a civilized area, he spends a lot of his time in the bush and areas where there is not technology. So I really enjoyed talking with Paul, and kind of neat, through the wonders of technology, we could even have that conversation. He's halfway around the world in Africa, and he took some time, stayed up a little bit late because of the time zone differences, and talked a little bit about how technology is both shrinking the globe, but still challenges there in Malawi as he tries to spread the gospel. So let's listen to an interview with missionary Paul Nitz from Malawi. Joining us today is Pastor Paul Nitz, one of our missionaries in Lilongwe, Malawi, Africa. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
Thank you.
First of all, what time is it there?
It's 9:30 in the evening.
Okay, so we're recording this at about 1:30 in the afternoon here stateside. And you're joining us via Skype, correct?
Yeah, and it's working very well tonight.
Yeah, you sound like, Sally mentioned as you joined us, that it sounds like you're right next door, so perfect. Maybe you should start and tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your family and where exactly you're serving and what kind of work you're involved with at this point in Africa.
Yeah, well, I'm Paul Nitz. I'm son of Paul Nitz, who is the professor at the seminary. Mm-hmm. I graduated from the seminary in 1993. And I've been in Malawi ever since. So I was called out of the seminary here.
Okay. And what is it that you... go ahead.
Yeah, I spent the first 9 years here as what we call a bush missionary. You're kind of like a vacancy pastor supervising. I think the most I supervised was about 13 congregations at a time. So covering the congregations that aren't... served by a national pastor, a resident national pastor. And then after that, I moved cities and came here to Lilongwe, where I've been teaching at the Lutheran Bible Institute, sort of the Northwestern College of our worker training system. Mm-hmm. They go from here over to Lusaka Seminary.
And I'm assuming when you went over there, you obviously had to learn the language. What kind of process was that? You got that, Sally?
Yeah, I'm taking strict notes here.
Yeah, I had to learn it. Not many expatriates over here do. I think I've met, maybe four or five Europeans or Americans in the 17 years I've been here who have known Chichewa, if
right?
I don't count missionaries.
Okay. So what did you just say to us?
Oh, I just said, yeah, I learned Chichewa, and it went okay.
Okay. Sounded very fluent to me, right, Sally?
Yeah. What about your kids? Do they speak as well?
No, learning language is a need-to-know thing, and my kids, well, actually, just the same as other expats in the country, it is not a need-to-know thing unless you're a missionary going out into the bush and preaching and teaching. You can survive just fine in the city with English. It's actually two national languages in Malawi, Chichewa and English. So my kids go to a international school where they speak English in town. Everywhere you can speak English, so... No, they don't know much except for a few things. They feel kind of sad about that, though. Mm-hmm. They want to learn it.
So do you live in Lilongwe, and how big a city is that?
I just bought a paper today. I was reading the thing front to back because I was 4 hours in a line trying to get diesel. Mm-hmm. And there was a population report in there that just come out, and it was 600,000 in Lilongwe.
Okay.
And that's one of the two big cities. The other one is Blantyre. Mm-hmm. I lived there for 6 years too. That's by the way, a Scottish name, Blantyre, that's the birthplace of Livingstone.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, it's about 600,000. But if you would look at it like the way we think of cities in the States, we think of buildings and houses, it would look like a city of 100,000.
Yeah, because 600,000, that's about the size of Milwaukee, for instance, but probably much more, you know, compact. So what we really wanted to talk to you about was technology and how you use it. First of all, the concept here of technology in the bush, but you're really not in the bush. You live in an industrialized city of sorts, I would assume. Tell us a little bit about what kind of technology is at your disposal there in Lilongwe, and a little bit of what you have to pay to do things like this.
Yeah, well, we all have, houses with electricity and live fairly normally that way, and we all have computers. And we bring them from the States usually.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they bring them on a shipment. Like I have a computer coming right now, or one time I brought a computer as a carry-on. It was a CPU desktop. I wrapped it up in some upholstery material that we were bringing over, and I roped it up and carried it on the plane like a carry-on.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we buying it here. Once I bought a CPU here, but it was cheap. It was chock full of unlicensed software, and I won't do that again.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as the actual hardware, we bring things over from the States. I don't know what else. The internet we do have now. About 4 years ago, we were still using dial-up, and that was pretty painful.
Mm-hmm.
But we finally have a broadband now.
And what about others, the natives? Is computer usage, filtering to all the people there in Lilongwe, or is that just more with your missionary staff?
Yeah, here at the campus, we're on a school campus. We have three missionary houses here and two national Malawian teachers here, and then all the students live here. All of us teachers, the Malawians and the missionary teachers, have computers, and we're hooked up to a network. But none of the students use computers. Most people in Lilongwe would not use a computer unless they're on the wealthier side.
So as you do your teaching and even your worship and travel out to the bush, that kind of thing, are you using computers in any of those settings, or is it mainly just for your production of your materials and that kind of thing?
Yeah, more of the latter. I mean, I've thought about using PowerPoint. We actually have a digital projector, and I never have, partly because I never have in the classroom. It would be out of the question in the bush, but I never have in the classroom because I just never want my students to think that you have to have something like that in order to be a good teacher. And so I think it's a little bit inappropriate technology for what we're doing here.
So describe your students a little bit. Are they young? Are they all on the same kind of educational track as far as are they pre-seminary? Are they seminary students and ultimately they would graduate and go back to their hometowns and start churches there? What's the ministry there? Paul, are you still there?
Sam? Yeah, hello. Oh. You're back. Sorry.
Okay. Did you hear
the regular Malawi?
Did you hear my question?
I did. Yeah. No, they're all like pre-seminary students. So
okay.
They stay with us for 3 years straight, and then they go on to the seminary in Lusaka, and they're ages ranging from maybe 24 to 38. I guess. Mm-hmm. We have 13 students right now. We have about half from Malawi, about half from Zambia, and we have one Zimbabwean. So, yeah.
And their backgrounds are do they live in the city, or are they coming from outer, you know, outside the city?
Yeah, almost all came from rural areas. So coming here to Lilongwe and living here on the campus, that was a big cultural change for them.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking back to technology, you know, one surprising thing in Africa in general, and especially in Malawi, is cell phone use.
Mm-hmm.
I looked up statistics on that because I had seen some amazing ones before. We have 13 million people in the country, and 200,000 landline phones. I mean, just think about that, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very small number of landline phones, and 1.5 million cell phone users.
Is that, so when you go out in the bush, for instance, you can get a cell signal?
You know, we have better coverage here than you have in the States.
Is that right?
Wow.
Yeah, there's very few places in anywhere in Malawi where you can't get a signal. And it's used, it's expensive though. It's, what is it, about 35 cents to call a cell phone, another cell phone. It's about 50 cents a minute to call a landline.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really expensive. And all of it is these, I don't know exactly what you call it in the States, but here they call it prepay SIM card.
Right.
Cell phone. So you buy a card, you put your number in, and they actually denominate it in U.S. dollars. So you buy a $5 card.
Okay.
And you can burn that up really quick.
Yeah, you got to be brief. It's kind of like you need to practice your Twitter skills on the phone, 140 characters or less.
Yeah, and you know the consequences of that. You combine the high cost, and yet so many people having cell phones, there are some funny things that come out of that. First of all, SMS is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Because it only costs 10 cents. And flashing. You ever heard of flashing before with cell phones?
You say flashing, F-L-A-S-H?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, nope.
Yeah, here in Malawi, you could walk out of the door and say, oh, honey, you know, if so-and-so needs me, just give me a flash. Just flash me. It means call your cell phone and just let it ring once and I won't answer it.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
And it's even gotten into the Chichewa language. It's so funny. There was a billboard for a cell phone company, and it said, Tasioku Flasha, which means we've stopped flashing. Why? Because the rates are cheaper.
So it's really economics driven. You've got a whole communications approach that's driven by the economics of the phones there. That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm hoping that the prices go down now. The Malawian government just issued a new license for a cell phone provider. We only have two right now,
mm-hmm.
and they're both expensive. So maybe with three or more, we'll get a little competition.
So does Malawi have the iPhone, for instance?
No. Although you can get it, and what's the term they have for it?
Unlocked?
There's some funny hip term that they have for crashing it or breaking it or something like that.
Jailbreaking.
But that's what it means. You unlock the jailbreak. That's it, yeah.
Right.
So I've heard that you can do that, but I don't think it'd be, you know, worth it over here. You wouldn't get the wireless with the iPhone over here.
Right. So when you do prep, and I'm assuming that's your primary use of technology when you get on the internet and when you're communicating with, let's say, coworkers or associates or people stateside here at the seminary or whatever, I'm assuming technology plays a big part in that.
Yeah. Yeah, it sort of intra-mission.
Right.
It's really huge. And, yeah, I remember first getting my little 2400 bits per second modem, and a couple years after I got here, and the only way you could get email was to be on it's not AOL. What was the one?
CompuServe.
Yeah, CompuServe. They had CompuServe.
Okay.
And it was dreadfully slow because you're on dial-up and you're on this little tiny modem.
Right.
And then you had to be really careful to unplug the thing every time you stopped using it, because any flash of lightning somewhere out there might burn it out.
Okay.
In fact, I remember one day I forgot to unplug it, and I was outside, and it was a sunny day, and miles away I heard this little rumble of thunder, and I thought, oh, I forgot to unplug my modem. I better go do that. Well, it was burned out.
Oh, wow.
Because in the States, you don't know it, but in the States they have these little gas fuses in the phone lines. So then we got wise, and we figured out this way to, you just cut the phone line and you twist on a fuse holder from a car, the kind that just kind of stick together, and you put a little 250 milliamp fuse in there, and you fuse your phone line, and then it will burn the fuse usually instead of your modem. But those days are long gone. Now we had something similar though with broadband here on the campus. I'm kind of the guy, the go-to guy for a lot of the tech stuff here. So I was helping to set up the network on the campus. That's just about any workman you have, whether it's plumber or electrician or if it's tech stuff, you got to be right there with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm learning together with them, and we're setting things up, and we strung Ethernet wire between the houses. Well, we kept on blowing APs, and we didn't know why. I found out, searching the internet, that you can have a lightning strike far away, and yet this Ethernet will pick up on the electrical charge, and it'll blow out your AP.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're losing access point left and right, or a router, and here they're expensive. You get a cheap D-Link AP, and you're going to pay $250.
Mm-hmm.
Or something that might cost 30 or 40 in the States.
Right.
So we finally then went to a wireless network here on campus.
Solved those problems, hopefully.
They didn't teach all that at SEM, did they?
That's what I was thinking. Oh,
I've learned a lot about electricity, electronics, and all sorts of things over here.
And as far as your connections with the seminary and other worldwide seminaries, do you guys collaborate between the different worldwide locations? And is technology assisting in that effort as well?
I really wish it was more. I really have a dream that it could be a great value, but it's not right now. We had one effort of a virtual library for all theological educators who are in our fellowship. And it's still there, but it's unwieldy and it's little used, and it's not a real great tool. I'd really like to figure out the new Wells Connect and use that as a way to connect different theological educators, but it just keeps on getting put on the back burner. We just need someone to be sort of a manager, promoter. Maybe some Wells pastor out there wants to do it sitting in the States, because you sure could do it from the States.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody to just kind of cheerlead these guys, all of us, on and say, okay, let's get talking about different topics here. The topic for this month will be teaching Greek or something like that.
Right, right. But it certainly would be a good platform to use, because that's kind of what Connect is designed to do, is to allow collaboration and document storage and sharing, and foster that social nature of what you do. So sounds like you have more than enough to do, and we certainly appreciate you taking some time out in your evening schedule from halfway across the world and letting our listeners know a little bit about how things are for you and your work there. You know that our prayers are always with you, and we think that by what you do over there is really a wonderful thing for the kingdom.
Well, thank you very much, and our blessings from Malawi and Wells, too.
Thank you, Paul. Have a great evening.
You too.
Sally, I still marvel at the fact that we could have that conversation like he was right next door.
Yeah, it was neat to go through the planning process with Missionary Nets. He said, let's do it in the evening, my time, because that's when the electricity is most reliable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we had to make that work, and thankfully it did.
Great. So thanks again, Paul, for joining us and for sharing that. Blessings on your ministry there. Obviously a very important work. Ministry resources. What do we have this week?
Well, I'm excited to share some resources that Nancy Thompson tweeted about. She shared three different links to media, free video resources available, particularly around the Christmas time theme. Mm-hmm. And they are from Worship House Media, Centerline Media, and Muddy River Media. And both Worship House and Centerline are having giveaways this month. Centerline on a daily basis, and Worship House has picked 12 days during the month of December, so they're 12 days of Christmas where they're giving away various video resources that you can make use of, maybe in Bible class or worship, depending on what type of resources you need there.
Sometimes you can even embed those on your website, depending on the copyright, just as
sure.
a good way to introduce a theme or Advent service or Christmas service. These videos are really well done.
They are. I was excited. My husband and I, along with our outreach committee, have been brainstorming about doing some video for our website, some brief little videos on topical studies or whatever. And to have these resources, some of them are actually, you know, speaking and that kind of thing, but some of them are just background type resources,
right.
which you can build upon. And in particularly, the resources from Muddy River Media, Nancy mentioned that they have a $10 Christmas package. It's not a free thing, although the vast majority of the resources on their website are free. They've got some special stuff bundled for $10, and I was able to make use of it this weekend, so I'm
cool.
just really excited. I had an Advent by Candlelight event at our church this weekend where the ladies get together
great
and decorate
application.
The tables.
Yeah.
And the Muddy River package had about a 5-minute video that was kind of like when you go into the movie theater and they have some trivia questions on the screen and you can just sit back and relax and think through that as you're waiting for a program to start. And during our initial gathering time, I was able to play this video, and instead of movie trivia, it was actually Christmas song trivia.
Oh, cool.
So it had little phrases from Christmas songs, and you were supposed to identify the song that it came from.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big hit. It was a lot of fun. It's really elegant looking on the screen. They have a kind of a French horn with notes spewing out, and you're thinking music and songs as you're watching this simple video. But
right.
it was a nice, elegant addition to our Advent by Candlelight. We ended up doing some other projected, you know, song lyrics and things like that for people to sing along with. But this was a great way to start off the program. And
very
I was
cool.
very excited to make use of it. And Martin, I should mention that I downloaded Office 2010 beta, which was one of your recent picks, and made use of that as well. So I was a Wells Tech girl.
Okay. I'm really enjoying this segment. We haven't been doing this ministry resources segment for too long, but if you want to check on all the past things that we've recommended here, or at least brought to light, we have a whole ministry resources page on the show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. But that's one of the reasons that we started this show, is to try and surface some of these tools that our congregations and schools may not have heard about. And we've had some great ones here recently, so take advantage of those.
Definitely. And before we skip to our picks of the week, I wanted to make mention of News and Tech, just a follow-up on last week's show where you talked about the Chrome operating system.
Mm-hmm.
In that conversation, you mentioned Lala.com as being a new audio streaming service that you had come across. And lo and behold, what did I wake up to today but news that Lala.com, which I'd never heard about before last week, has been bought by Apple, and Apple is looking at the streaming model for delivering music now.
I heard for $80 million. Wow, that was, that is a significant purchase. So I don't know if that's good. When Apple buys something, that typically means it's going to cost more. So we'll see. Remember, if you didn't listen to last week's show, Lala is an online streaming service, and you can actually purchase songs too. But the model is, if you want a song to play, you know, basically forever, it's 10 cents. So you pay 10 cents per song, and then you can listen to it as many times as you want. So it's definitely Apple's play to get into the streaming business, and Lala had a really good service. So hopefully that will continue, and we'll still be able to take advantage of that. Got my fingers crossed, but we'll see. Picks of the week, Sally. What's your pick this week?
Well, I'm relying on my Twitter network yet again. My friend Jason Schmidt, who is at Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska, tweeted yesterday, and he knows me well, even though we're just Twitter buddies, because I'm a do-it-yourself kind of techie girl, and he found an awesome do-it-yourself project that I'm just going to have to investigate. Started back when we built our own Wii Remote smart board system. That was a do-it-yourself project we did last year. My husband is into this as well. And this year we built an under-the-counter laptop, and now Jason has pointed me to a do-it-yourself document reader. And document readers have been one of those techie things that I've had on my wish list, but they're way too expensive for us to buy here. But what it allows you to do is project on the screen any flat type object. Instead of it being a clear acetate kind of projection system, basically it's a camera that looks at whatever you lay on the surface and projects it. So it can be a book. I've seen them in the Apple store where they lay their iPod or iPhone there and demonstrate things on the iPod on the screen. And so Jason found a do-it-yourself recommendation for building a document reader using, of all things, PVC pipe. How much better can you get for a do-it-yourself project? And basically a high-pixel web camera. Just mount it up there and are able to project whatever you lay on that surface that you build. So I think that I see a document reader in my near future. We'll see.
Jason, you hit Sally's sweet spot there. So it's a technology DIY. And
there you go. And we will have a link in the show notes to the article, the blog post, and you can build your own and send us pictures of it.
Sweet. Yeah, I did a little investigating. I didn't see a great picture of one, so I'm really eager to see how yours turns out. So you're going to do this, right?
I'm going to do it.
Okay. Awesome. Sounds like a great application and almost a must-have for a classroom, I would think, right?
Yeah, I think it would be
probably
a big
benefit. You know, money saver, too.
Absolutely.
You know, those document scanners, readers are really expensive, and this seems to actually give you a little bit more since it's video. So, all right, my pick is actually a rerun of sorts. A while back, I don't know how long ago it was, I picked a free Acrobat or Adobe Acrobat format or PDF reader called Foxit, Foxit Reader, kind of a replacement for, you know, the Adobe PDF reader that you can get for free from Adobe.com. This is a little lighter weight, and the reason that I'm picking it again is that I've recently been using what's called Foxit Phantom, which I call kind of the PDF Swiss Army knife of PDF utilities. It's basically their premium package that includes all the things that you can do to a PDF, including annotation, you can sort pages, you can do forms, all kinds of different ability to manipulate PDF files, shrink them, all kinds of things that you wouldn't be able to do with the free Adobe Reader. Now, this is not free. It's $129, but that is relatively inexpensive when you compare it to what Adobe charges for the same functionality in their what they call their Acrobat Standard package, which is $229. So for $100 cheaper, you can get Foxit Phantom and do all those things. And I think it works a little bit better. It's a little bit lighter weight. It's a little faster. And I think the feature set is a little bit stronger. PDFs are really an increasingly important part of congregation and school publishing needs. I don't know about you, Sally, but we use them all the time, and it's really the preferred publishing mechanism for newsletters, especially because it maintains the format and keeps the file size small. They're very portable. Everybody can read them rather than like a Word doc or something that somebody might not be able to open or you know, it's not quite as optimized or keeps the formatting with fonts and such. So for those congregations that are kind of big into the PDF stuff, this would be, I think, a wise purchase. Foxit Phantom.
Very good. We are using PDFs quite a bit for our worship folder.
Uh-huh.
We found with our live video streaming that it's important that people have a worship bulletin to follow along with mm-hmm. the service, especially since we're using a lot of the material from the new worship supplement.
Right.
So maybe people might have a hymnal at home, but they don't have the supplement at home.
Sure.
And we print all
like
of that
music,
from
right.
the digital copy in
mm-hmm.
our worship folder. So
yeah.
we're always PDFing it.
Good. All right. Community feedback. We had a lot last week. Where do we start?
Well, let's start with Twitter, Martin.
Oh,
I love Twitter.
Okay.
And we heard from several people on Twitter. Rob Jacqueline, who was the teacher that we featured to start our discussion last week on different religious projects. He's using Glogster in his classroom, and he wrote back to let us know that it was a really neat thing for us to include his project because he was able to share that with his students. And I loved his comment. He said, it helps his students realize that the work they do isn't just for me. And, you know, that just kind of points to the global world that we live in
mm-hmm.
now, you know, how you're little small Lutheran school can reach out to the world with the work that they do. So
yep.
we are off and running with our own Glogster projects at St. John's here in Sleepy Eye, and I'm anxious to see what they put together. They're supposed to be doing Christmas projects this week in computer labs. So
cool.
Should be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Gail Potratz from Emmanuel in New London tweeted a link to Apture, APTURE.com.
Mm-hmm.
And their tagline says that you can add multimedia to your website with one click. So haven't had a chance to check that out, but it looks like a really simple way for bloggers or others to add all kinds of media to their website very simply. So
yep. Very
give it a
nice.
Try.
Thanks, Gail.
And again, we heard from Jason Schmidt from Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska, and he is trying out the TweetDeck update, and he linked to a really neat article about the power of your personal learning network. And it was a teacher whose students had found an animal skeleton in their marshy area behind their school, and they took pictures of it and tried to, you know, figure out what kind of skeleton it was.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried several different approaches. You know, traditionally they talked to a veterinarian in town, talked with the school librarian. They actually went to the Fish and Wildlife Service, you know, those kind of more traditional research methods. And then the third thing they tried was to actually tweet about it,
mm-hmm.
put out images that they had taken of the skeleton and into the Twitterverse, I guess you could call
right.
it. And they got amazing responses via Twitter, and people connected them with all kinds of experts and all of this. It turned out it was a raccoon skeleton, but a really neat project for the students to be involved in to see the power of the social network
cool.
learning universe, I guess you could
very
call
nice.
It.
Very nice, yeah.
Yeah, neat.
Then I got an email from Dan Numminson, who I've known for many years. He was a member at my first congregation in Milwaukee, Salem. His father was the district president for many years in the Southeast Wisconsin District. He works for Wisconsin Lutheran Child and Family Service, and he had a question for me wondering if I knew good church newsletter software. And he's obviously in the newsletter business, the e-newsletter business, and was looking for something that provided some some good templates and some plug-in kind of architecture for daily news events, weather, you know, a nice editor that you could add content for scripture readings, prayers, you know, that kind of thing. And I didn't have a lot to share with him, but one thing that I've known about for a long time, and I know it probably every church secretary knows about, is the newsletter. We'll put a link to it in the show notes, but a great resource, and they've kind of evolved over time. They used to be just more, you know, tips and tricks and clip art kinds of things, and you'd get it mailed to you each month, and you get the churchy clip art kind of stuff each month. But they've evolved as well. They recognize that e-newsletters are the direction that a lot of congregations are going, so they've modified their resources as well. So go to that website and take a look at that. And obviously we encourage Dan to take a look at MailChimp, which is something the Synod is going to be launching all their e-newsletters on. It's a platform that provides templates, and we've talked about MailChimp in the past. One of the great, great features about MailChimp is the ability to do analytics on the emails that you send out, how many were opened, what links were clicked on, handles bounces very well. And for, I want to say, for 5,000 emails a month, it's free. And you have, I think you have a list maximum of 500 people. So if your list is less than 500 people and you don't send out more than maybe 3,000, I'm not sure, then you can use their service for free, but even very reasonable beyond that. So thanks, Dan, for the question, and hopefully that's helpful to you.
I think we can even dig up a bonus Wells Tech Goodness episode dedicated to setting up an e-newsletter
yep.
with MailChimp.
That's right.
Add that link to the show notes as mm-hmm. well. Next up, have to brag on you a little bit, Martin. last week in our show, we included a video that Martin produced demonstrating
produced
Bible.
Is a pretty sophisticated word for what happened there, Sally.
Martin recorded a very wonderful screencast video
yes.
Demonstrating Bible Glow software using Luke 2 as his example.
Mm-hmm.
Included that in our show notes last week, and apparently, Martin, it was a huge hit. We got feedback from John Shoesmith. He told us how much he enjoyed your exploration of Bible Glow. And then we also heard from someone else, Martin. It was actually someone from Bible Glow
mm-hmm.
Thanking us for the podcast and asking for permission to use your video file on their website so
yep.
that people can see you demonstrate, and you know, it would be more of a user-focused demonstration than something they produce themselves. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, and I actually sent a feedback to them that asked for some reciprocity, where they would send somebody to come on the show. So hopefully we'll have somebody from Bible Glow on the show in the near future, hopefully one of the creators. So that'd be cool to get that interview on the show. And also discount code for our congregations. So that is, I'm told, both of those things will happen. So stay tuned for some more Bible Glow news.
That's great.
Not bad all for right. a crummy 4-minute video.
I don't think it was crummy at all. I thought you did a great job.
So. All right. I'll take your word for it.
Next up, I just wanted to follow up on a conversation we had last week, stemming from a question from Steve Mathwick.
Mm-hmm.
He had asked about our iTunes updates. They seem to be a little bit out of sync, and I can see now that iTunes has cleared up that problem.
Mm-hmm.
Our basic explanation was it's up to iTunes to do those updates, and we can't control it. And thankfully, they decided to kick it into gear, and we are now all in sync on the iTunes site. So.
Yeah. So hopefully we didn't lose any listeners in the process. We're always looking to grow our audience, and so spread the word that iTunes is a great way to stay up on the episodes that are released, and you can download previous episodes. You can always obviously go to our show notes page as well.
And again, we heard from John Shoesmith. He's our friend out in Washington State who is our resident closed captioning expert.
Mm-hmm.
John has done a tremendous amount of work in closed captioning sermon videos and documented thoroughly the process on our Wells Tech Wiki, and we always appreciate hearing from him. And he wrote to us excited because Google and YouTube are adding closed captioning automatically to the videos on their site.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, Martin, that you and I had talked about this a little bit before getting John's email that they're going to be using some of their Google Voice translation technology to make this happen. So we will see how it develops. I'm sure over time it's going to be a real refined process and hopefully really add a lot for our deaf and hard of hearing members.
Yep, very good.
We had an email from Mark Hellman, who runs a company called Twinfinity Creations in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And Twinfinity is basically a Christian artist sharing website where people can put their work on there kind of on a consignment type basis. And he has just wonderful Wells artist and things there. And he wrote to us because he was excited to add Susan Ann, a Wells recording artist, to his website. She's put four of her CDs on the Twinfinity website. So if you're looking for some Susan Ann music, that might be a place for you to find it. And he just said he's enjoying the Wells Tech podcast and it's helping him as he continues to build his web presence. So we love hearing from our listeners and it's always encouraging to know that what we're doing is a helpful resource for them.
Very good. Yeah, thanks for sharing. Appreciate that.
And our last community feedback mention, I want to mention that we heard from Julie Duran. She's our Wells webmaster, and she sent us some additional links for our RSS page on the Wells Tech Wiki. Mm-hmm. She found some really neat Google resources where you can build something they call a news show, which flashes your headlines one by one and even includes images if there are images on the RSS feed that you're tapped mm-hmm. into. And you can build your own. I think a little bit of Java programming may be involved. So if you're a Java person, this might be something for you to check out.
Mm-hmm. But very simple. I wouldn't be scared off by it. It's mostly cut and paste and change a few parameters.
Okay. Just a few more links that Julie provided. So our RSS page is really becoming quite the resource page. I'm excited about that.
Yep, me too. That's great stuff. So remember, our Wells Tech Wiki is something that anybody can contribute to. So if you have things that you're finding that you'd like to share with the Wells Tech audience or Wells members in general that are interested in technology, wellstechwiki.wells.net. Just go and grab an account if you don't already have one and contribute your content. We would love to see it there.
Absolutely.
Next week, what are we doing next week, Sally?
We are revisiting our book selection. It's mm-hmm. called The Hidden Power of Electronic Culture, How Media Shapes Faith, the Gospel, and Church. And it's written by Shane Hipps. We'll put a link in the show notes. If you don't have it yet, you might want to grab a copy and read along with us. We'll be doing Chapter 2, Perceiving the Powers That Shape Us.
We're getting into the nuts and bolts of the book at this point. Last time we talked about this, we were more just introductory. So this gets a little bit deeper, and so there's some good thinking here. I think we're going to enjoy our conversation and hope you do too.
Very good.
All right, let's close the show, Sally, with some more Advent music from Don Galhar, just extremely talented on the keyboard, and I enjoy listening to her music very much, from her album Christmas Dreams, O Little Town of Bethlehem. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Let's do it again next week.